Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Oh, got it! Got it! Got it! 33!
Center field, Marsh leaps, and he got it!
It normally.
High fly ball, deep left field. Oh, 27 does it again
for this year.
Wall sends it well out to left center field, and it's gone. He went to Jared.
Way
diving catch, Joe Adell.
This is Brandon Marsh, the Los Angeles Angels baseball. You listen to All Angels Podcasts.
And welcome to another edition of the All Angels Podcast. I am your host, Daniel Garcia. So after the brawl against the Seattle Mariners, I jumped on the podcast and we kind of talked about the series, but we also talked about the brawl and how we thought it would affect the Angels going forward. And the first test of that was against the Chicago White Sox, who came into Angel Stadium. Honestly, the Chicago White Sox are very close to what I think the Angels are when you look at the team and the season they're having so far. Both teams had high expectations coming into this season. Chicago because of what they did last year, and the Angels because of who they added this last offseason. But they both had very high expectations with the extra wild card spot that both these teams would be competing for a wild card spot, or in Chicago's the division. But they find themselves almost in an identical record in this almost identical spot in the wild card race. So this was going to be a good test to see how the Angels bounce back from that brawl against the Mariners. But before the game even started, the suspensions that you knew were coming down were announced by Major League Baseball. And like I mentioned in the last podcast, it was only a matter of time before these kind of things got announced and you would have people, you know, start missing time. The question was who would be involved, who would be suspended, and for how long. That was the big mystery when it came to everything with the discipline of the kerfuffle, if you will, from Sunday. So like I mentioned, Monday before the game started, the punishments came down, and the Angels side of it, the punishments read like this. Phil Nevin, obviously the interim manager, received 10-game suspension. Angels third baseman Anthony Rendon received a 5-game suspension, which in all likelihood will be served at the end or at the beginning of next season, because it is very likely that he is out this season with that wrist surgery that he had not too long ago. Angels assistant pitching coach, and I believe he's the bullpen coach, you see him out there all the time, Dom Chidi, received a 5-game suspension for his actions during the incident. And I went on Instagram Live after this, I believe it was Tuesday, to talk about some of these suspensions and everything like that. And if you watch the John Boy video on YouTube, Dom was definitely in the middle of it, trying to hold the guy down and definitely trying to, trying to hold the guy back, but it looks like he was just trying to hold him down. He was wrestling him and getting dragged all over the place. Now that we are almost a week past that, it's kind of hard not to look back and laugh at some of the things that happened during that altercation with the Seattle Mariners. But continuing on the list, Andrew Wantz, the pitcher who threw at Jesse Winker, received a 3-game suspension, and he actually served it. He did not appeal it like the other players involved in this situation. So Andrew is actually going to be eligible to come back when the Angels take on Houston in Houston starting on Friday. So that suspension has already been served and he's going to be back. But that didn't stop there. Angels pitcher Ryan Tepera received a 3-game suspension. Rossell Iglesias received a 2-game suspension. And I am very interested to see if, for example, Rossell didn't do a whole lot in the altercation. He was pointing, yelling, and stuff like that. But as far as physically, I didn't see him do a whole lot. And I think that's why he was so upset about getting tossed, is that physically he didn't really do anything. So I'm interested to see if he didn't go on that little, you know, tantrum or whatever you want to call it about throwing the seeds onto the field and the bubble gum on the field, if he would have even got anything at all, or if it would have just been, well, he kind of served his time because of the fact that he did get thrown out on Sunday. But both Tapera and Iglesias are appealing the suspension. So that's why they were involved in all, or in, they're eligible for all 3 games against Chicago, getting into 2 of those games. So that's why certain players were still, you watch some of the highlights like Jesse Winker, PJ Crawford, Julio Rodriguez. Those guys were also given out suspensions, but like Iglesias and like Tapera, they are appealing. And that's why if you turn on a Seattle Mariner highlight, you might see Jesse Winker, one of these guys, because they are appealing. And just like the Angels players, they have a right to appeal and they can play while that is going on. So after Rossell Iglesias, you also now have Angels bench coach Ray Montgomery received 2-game suspension. And this is one of the funnier parts too. Angels major league interpreter Manny DeCampo received 2-game suspension, and Angels catching coach Bill Hasselman received a 1-game suspension. So obviously you have some of the players like Rendon, Tapera, Wance suspended, but you also have a lot of their coaching staff suspended. And I think it's pretty funny when you see some of these guys, and some of these guys are older guys, being involved in a bench clearing situation like that, and now are having to pay the price as far as being suspended. Obviously, the 10-game for Phil Nevin is a huge, huge suspension, something that I have not seen from a manager in a while. And just so you guys know, and you might not be familiar with it, players can't appeal because of the players' union. Coaches and managers and even interpreters in this instance, they cannot appeal. So Nevin and a couple of the other coaches were serving their suspensions right away. The MLB allowed them to stagger their suspensions a little bit so not all the coaches would be missed all at once. Now, I believe, obviously, Manny DeCampo, 2 games, so he's back. Ray Montgomery did not have to serve his suspension yet, but I think they said this weekend against Houston he will, because they are getting some of their coaches back. So, but Phil Nevin, obviously, with the big one, 10 games. To me, that showed that MLB does not want this to happen again. If you remember exactly what happened on Saturday night about Phil jawing with the Seattle, I don't know if he was talking to the manager or if he was talking to the pitcher that went up and in on Trout. I don't know exactly who he was yelling at, but you can definitely tell he was having words with someone with the Seattle Mariners. And the actions of him announcing Saturday night that Suarez was going to be the starter on Sunday, and then an hour and a half, maybe hour before the game, switching it to an opener, definitely wasn't a good look for Nevin. And definitely if he wanted to plead innocent and didn't know what was going on, and that's not the plan, and that's, you know, he definitely didn't do a good job of hiding his tracks in that situation. Everything he did looked very intentional. Whether that's going to give him points with his team, or if that's going to, you know, not, and if it's worth it, it's worth it. But on the MLB side, it definitely does look like it was intentional. I think that's why he got a huge 10-game suspension. But for the Angels, those were the suspensions given out Monday before the game against the Chicago White Sox. You knew there would be some suspensions and disciplinary actions because of what happened on Sunday, but that's it. Managers and coaches are serving them pretty much right now, and we'll have to see. And hopefully with the Tapera and with the Iglesias hearings, the appeal hearings, hopefully they get reduced maybe by a game each. So you're talking about Tapera then maybe only missing two games and Iglesias maybe only missing one game. So that's something that's still kind of out there, and that's still something that is going to have a announcement whenever that hearing is, and I'm guessing it's going to be at some point next week, but I'm not 100% sure. So again, those suspensions that they're appealing can, you know, do one of two things. They can either stay exactly where they're at if the arbiter decides that it's fair, or it can be reduced. So again, that's something to kind of watch out for in this upcoming week. I don't think they'll make an announcement on the weekends, but maybe. But yeah, that's something to look out for. And hopefully they do get reduced and we're not missing the back end of the bullpen for more than one game or two games or anything like that. So again, definitely look out for that. And hopefully that kind of closes the book on this. There's one more kind of fallout for this incident that we'll get to a little bit later. But for the suspension part of it and the disciplinary part of it, it seems like it's over. And once those appeals are heard, they can now finally kind of turn the page and move forward. Now, again, Angels and Mariners are supposed to lock up again, if you will, in the beginning of August up in Seattle. So it's going to be really interesting to see how those teams do with each other, you know, back or up there in Seattle at the beginning of August, if everything's going to be nice and chill, or if there's still going to be some kind of resentment for this last weekend. So that's that. That's the suspensions. Those are the games that guys will be missing, both players and coaches. So obviously the Angels took that emotional momentum they had from that incident on Sunday, from that bench clearing brawl, if you will, and got the win on Sunday. Now, again, how is that going to continue onto the year, onto the next series, onto the next month? I, again, was one that thought, you know, this could carry the team for a little bit, you know, whether it is one series, two series, three series, but I didn't think it's going to be something that's going to be sustainable for a whole month or for a whole season, definitely. So, but what can they do to bounce back and keep that kind of momentum rolling? Well, like I mentioned, Chicago White Sox in town to face the Angels with Noah Syndergaard on the mound and looking for definitely a bounce back type of game, definitely a game where he can prove that he is worth a big contract towards the end of or going into next year. And that's one thing you got to start looking into the further and further we get into the season and we get closer and closer to that trade deadline and all-star break is these guys who are on one-year deals, you know, now they are pretty much competing for what they're going to do next year. Now, whether that means Noah comes back to the Angels or goes somewhere else, he needs to start really putting some stuff together back to back if he wants to get a big payday from whoever puts it out there. So hopefully now he's going to be able to pitch. Like, I've always had the thing with Noah Syndergaard since he came to the Angels. I think he's a very capable pitcher when he does certain things right. When he gets too strikeout happy because of he wants to be old Noah Syndergaard, I think it puts him in trouble. He walks guys. And obviously he's had a really, really bad job of keeping guys from stealing bases on him. And it's no secret. I think that is very well known now. He is very slow to the plate with men on base. And if you have the right type of guy on base, you know, Tim Anderson, one can be one of them. You can definitely steal. You can turn that single into a triple really quickly because of the ability of stealing bases behind Noah Syndergaard. So obviously the main thing is keep guys off base. And I think he does that best when he puts the ball in play and lets his defense behind him work. We saw some of his best outings as an Angel earlier this year is when he only got maybe five or four strikeouts. You know, you don't need to go out there and be like an Otani and strike out 13 or 12 or whatever. Noah Syndergaard seems to be doing really, really well when he is in that 4 to 5 strikeout during the game and he's letting the ball be put in play and his defense is taking care of him. So he gets into this game. The Angels would strike first in the bottom of the second when another struggling Angel comes up to the plate. Brandon Marsh, you know we love him here. He's been on the podcast since he was in single A Inland Empire, and obviously we're always rooting for the guy, but he has been really struggling at the plate as of late. His defense is going to carry him. His defense is going to keep him in that lineup, but in the bottom of the second, it feels like he's finally starting to get out of that slump with this triple slash home run. Well, you'll hear.
0-2. Towards right field, hit well. Sheets on his horse, going back for it, and he leaps that catch. Off his glove. Walsh is going to score. Marsh is digging for third. He's going to hold up right there. And they're calling that a home run. Off his glove and into the seats.
I think it went off a fan's hand.
After review, the call on the field is overturned. One run will score. The batter is placed at third base.
So, yeah. So, it ended up being a triple, maybe less than a foot away from being a home run. But I tweeted it out when it happened. I'm sure Brandon will take a triple. He's been really, like I said, really struggling at the plate. And I'm sure that had to feel good to get that kind of slump and get the ball rolling as far as, you know, putting the ball in play. And, you know, his biggest thing with him is obviously the strikeouts. But the funny part, or not the funny part, but the crazy part is that he still has really good recognition of the strike zone. Most of his strikeouts have been just missing. It's a strike. It's going to be a called strike. He swings and misses. So I don't know. Again, I've never been a hitting coach. I do not pretend to know what a hitting coach does. But I don't know if it's just late recognition or just, you know, not being able to catch up to what looks like how guys are pitching him. And that's high with fastballs. But he's still able to see if a pitch is going to be a ball or a strike. His recognition of the ball strike zone is still very good, but he sees it. He's just not able to put the ball in play, and it feels like for this game, he was able to put the bat on the ball a lot. So that ended up scoring one, and with the very next guy at bat, Andrew Velasquez, I guess finishes the job because it was really close to a home run.
Right up the middle, goes off Giolito. And that's going to score a run. RBI single. Giolito tried for the kick save. 2-0 Angels.
So the Angels would go up 2-0 after that single by Velasquez. Again, kind of finishing the job and letting Marsh come around to home to score, because obviously a lot of people thought that was a home run. Noah Syndergaard had a very, very good beginning to this game. I think the first two innings, maybe even the first three innings, his pitch count in those first couple innings were under like 10 pitches. I think the first inning he threw 8 pitches, and then like the second inning he might have thrown 9 pitches. So very, very efficient. He looked very, very good early, and that was the kind of Noah Syndergaard that I'm sure Angels fans and Noah Syndergaard fans were really, really hoping for. He did end up getting into a little bit of trouble in the top of the sixth inning. After getting the first out, he would end up walking Tim Anderson, and after that he would give up a double to Andrew Vaughn, which would score Anderson, making the score 2-0. But like any other great outing by a pitcher, you always are going to need some defensive help. And like I mentioned, Brandon has been really, really struggling, you know, at the plate. But one thing you cannot deny him is that he has been above average, Gold Glove level even, at in the outfield, and he shows it again with this play.
There's the 0-2. That's driven towards the gap. And Marsh on his horse. Oh, that was just tremendous defense. Fantastic catch. Saves the run. We have two outs here in the sixth.
So it was a great play by Brandon, definitely saving a run with that play. But unfortunately, the very next at bat, Jose Abreu. Again, this team, this Chicago White Sox team, reminds me so much of the Angels. So you look up and down the lineup and you're thinking like, these guys can mash. There are some names in this lineup, and for whatever reason, they have not been able to put it together for the full season. But Jose Abreu is one of those guys where you feel like he can kind of wake up at any point. Well, he hits a double that would end up scoring one run to tie the score at 2-2. Noah Syndergaard would end up going into the seventh, where he would give up another run to make the score 3-2. And after that seventh inning, his night was done. He ended up going 7 innings pitched, 6 hits, 3 runs, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts. So all in all, a very good performance by Noah Syndergaard. It started off really strong, and it made you feel like he was going to go. He ended up going 7 innings, so I can't say it felt like he was going to go deep in the game, because he did. 7 innings for a pitcher is deep, but there were some times where you felt that it was going to just fly through, and he wasn't going to be put in a whole lot of pressure. But like I mentioned, in the sixth inning, is it him being tired? Is it the guys getting around maybe the second or third time seeing him that are able to make adjustments, that were able to put the ball in play a little more? But either way, Syndergaard had a very, very good outing. Again, 7 innings pitched, 6 hits, 3 earned runs, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts. But he did leave the game down by 1. But in the bottom of that inning, the bottom of the seventh, the team would rally and get 2 more on the board with this Taylor Ward double.
Oh, that's definitely going to get a run in. That's hit well. Going back on it. Luis Robert unable to make the catch. Harrison scores. Brandon Morris trying to take the lead. He tries to slide. A collision at the plate. He is safe. Angels go up 4-3.
And if you saw this game and you saw the play at the plate, you have to love the fact that, again, Brandon Marsh going in head first, getting into a little bit of a collision with the catcher, but still able to score to take the lead for the Angels. A play you don't see very often, a collision at the plate, even though it wasn't very a hard collision, but you definitely have to worry about any kind of little tweak or little jam of the shoulder that was there in front of Brandon at the time when he, again, came home to make that fourth run. So like I mentioned, Syndergaard would be done at the end of that point. Tapera, who is appealing his suspension, that's why he's eligible to play, would come in and hold down the eighth inning for Iglesias, who would end up closing the game, and the Angels win 4-3. The momentum, I guess, keeps on going. The emotion keeps on going. But Noah Syndergaard, again, very, very good outing. Tapera, Iglesias, absolutely locked down at the back end of that bullpen for the Angels. And I mentioned, you know, at the beginning, Brandon had been struggling. This had to feel good, and hopefully this is a sign of things to come. He would end up going 3-for-4, being 2 runs, 1 RBI. This guy, Brandon, again, he's going to be in the lineup because of his defense. He has very, very good defense. You have to hope that at this point, you know, All-Star break or past All-Star break, he's going to be one of those secondary guys that can step up. And if the Angels are going to make a very good push for the playoffs, that he's going to be, along with, you know, maybe a couple of other guys, have to be the reasons why they're going to make that push. Obviously, Trout and Otani are going to be them, but they can only do so much. And we'll get to Otani, what he's done in this month alone later. But like I mentioned, someone from this like second level guys has to step up and be a little bit more consistent. Renjifo, Walsh, Marsh, whoever, you know, Wade, Stassi, whoever. But you definitely are going to need someone to kind of step up and take the lead for the second level guys, or the other guys, if you will. But great win again, coming back, getting up early, and then coming back. Angels win 4-3. So now we go into the next game of the series on Tuesday. Again, injuries kind of pop up before this game, in which we'll get to a little bit later. But you had Chase Seth on the mound coming back up from AA Rocket City to, you know, try to bounce back. Obviously, when he made his debut against the Oakland A's earlier this year, he had a very good debut. But ever since then, it's been kind of rocky for him. And part of that is obviously because of the fact that he's young, he's developing still. And once people understand what you're doing, they're able to sit on stuff or let stuff go. Now it's going to be up to you to kind of develop your secondary stuff. And I think obviously there is a lot of promise there with Chase. There's obviously a lot of potential there, but putting him in these situations, I'm not necessarily sure is the best for his development. I don't know if it's better to have him down at AA Mobile and just continue to develop and continue to learn. But either way, he got called up for this game, and early in the game, he was actually doing really, really well. He only really got into trouble when the lineup started flipping over and getting that second time through the lineup. But in the bottom of the third, Angels had a very good, very good inning, and it all started with Andrew Velasquez's fifth home run off of Johnny Cueto to make the score 1-0. A couple batters later, Mike Trout would come up and do Mike Trout things, hitting a home run, making his 23rd of the year. And before Mike Trout can even take off the cowboy hat, you had a back-to-back shot with Shohei Ohtani, his 17th of the year. So at the end of the third inning, you had the score 3-0 Angels, and you really had to start feeling good and feel like, yes, this momentum is going to keep on growing and keep on developing. But unfortunately, in the top of the fifth, like I mentioned, when the lineup started flipping over on Chase a couple times, you can tell that the guys were really starting to kind of barrel up some of those pitches, and that's exactly what happened. After the leadoff strikeout in the fifth, you end up giving two back-to-back hits, the second one being a double that would score Lourie Garcia to make the score 3-1, and obviously right after that, Josh Harrison ends up hitting a home run to make it 3-3, and you would make the Angels would make a pitching change after that, which would close the book on Chase Silseth. He went 4 1/3 innings, 5 hits, 3 runs, 6 strikeouts, 1 home run. So again, like I mentioned, he looked really, really good early. Is just now going to see how he can develop when he starts facing lineups, you know, the second time through. You know, that curveball or that fastball isn't going to look the same the second time through. These guys are going to be able to start sitting on stuff, and you can tell too in some of the replays they showed on Bally's with Gooby talking about that he just flat out missed locations on some of those hits. You could see Suzuki aiming down on the ground and tapping his glove on the ground, meaning, you know, I want it low in the zone. And if it's out of the zone, it's out of the zone. And then he would just miss up. And that was kind of their go zone for the Chicago White Sox that ended up putting the ball in play and obviously end up putting the ball over the fence. So obviously there's still a lot of stuff that needs to be worked with Chase, but you can definitely see the potential and what could be in the years going forward. So I wouldn't take too much into this start or the last start or even possibly his next start, because it is still a constant evaluation, a constant evolution when it comes to these pitchers and how young they are. So obviously that didn't go the way that the Angels wanted to, but obviously Oliver Otega would come up. He would end up giving up a home run to Luis Roberts that would score 2, making the score 5-2 Chicago White Sox, and it was just not a very good day after that. Chicago would end up scoring 5 runs in both the fifth and the seventh inning, and adding one more in the eighth inning, and the final score ended up being 11-4 Chicago. Pitching wise, it just did not click. You look at the guys they used in this game, guys who are very young or had just been struggling. You look at, again, Chase, very young. Oliver Ortega, very young. Loop, struggling. Elvis Peguero, young. Jaime Barea, young. So obviously a learning moment for all of these guys, and you're hopefully that they're able to learn from him and move forward, especially Elvis Peguero. And we'll talk about what we ended up seeing from him on the mound again at the end. We're going to try to finish off this last game of the Angels, and we'll get to all of the new stuff at the end of the podcast. But obviously Elvis had his issues, and we'll talk about that in a bit. So right now the Angels are tied 1-1 in the series. They went for the series win, which would be the first win in sometime. I didn't even look up, but I probably should have won the last time they won a series at home. But you can definitely, as Angel fans know, it was quite a while ago. But they had their best opportunity of doing it because Shohei Ohtani was on the mound. And if you've been following what he's been doing in this month, he's been doing everything at the plate, on the mound, everything. And he might even be serving drinks in his off time. I don't know, but he has been a very, very dominant force for the Angels this season. And going into this game, that's exactly what you were hoping for. And in the bottom of the first, they let Ohtani breathe a little bit because they were able to get on the board early. And it all started with this Mike Trout double.
And 2-1 driven by Mike Trout towards the gap. in left center. That gets down. Taylor Ward is going to be sent rounding third. The throw to the plate, not in time. He's in there. RBI double for Mike, and it's 1-0 Halos.
And after Jared Walsh grounds into a fielder's choice later in the inning that would allow Mike Trout to score on an error, the score was 2-0 Angels after the first inning. And the biggest thing with Shohei Ohtani has always been his pitch count. He is a very good strikeout pitcher, but for a lot of guys, those strikeouts also come with high pitch counts. Some of the games that he's pitched recently, and the one that comes to mind was his last start where he got 13 strikeouts. He was able to go very deep in the game for a couple reasons. And I think the main reason was the times that he wasn't getting strikeouts, he was getting guys to put the ball in play like the third or fourth pitch in that at bat. He wasn't, this is the worst thing in the world to let a guy get into a full count and then start fouling balls off. And then, yeah, maybe you do end up striking him out, but it might have took him 8 or 9 pitches to do so. When he was facing the Kansas City Royals and he was able to get 13 strikeouts, the times that he didn't get strikeouts, the guys were trying to jump on his first pitch and rolling over, popping up. So when he wasn't striking out, you only had like a two pitch at bat, and that let him get deeper into the game. Unfortunately, that's not exactly what happened in this game. Even though he was really dominant, he was not able to go as deep as the last time he pitched, which was 8 innings. This time he was only able to get to the 6th inning. He ended up going 5 2/3, 5 hits, 1 walk, 11 strikeouts, but he did all that on 108 pitches. His very last batter was a strikeout, but if you see the pitch, you see the slider that he threw to get the guy out, it was one of those things where I don't know how or why the guy swung at it. It was very high, very in, but he got the swing and miss. But you can tell that the fatigue was starting to play a part in this game, and you didn't want to allow Chicago to get back into it. It's the last thing you want to do. You have a team on the ropes. You want to be able to finish it. So in the bottom of the 6th, the Angels kept on adding on to give Shohei the opportunity to get another W with this Luis Renjifo home run.
Center field, Renjifo straight away, and he hits it well. Luis Renjifo! See ya! 2-run home run! 4-0 Angels!
And that is one thing the Angels failed to do, I believe, on Tuesday, is they scored early, they got those 3 runs early, but they were not able to add on after that. I've always said, it's always been a thing of mine, you need to add on. These innings where you score 3, 4, 5 runs in a single inning are great, but I never feel comfortable that that's going to hold. Partly because, yes, the Angels have had their issues with the bullpen, but another is just because you allow a team to shake it off, you kind of take their best shot, and now it's time for you to respond. And if you don't keep on, you know, jabbing them, they're going to come back, and a lot of good teams will. So after Shohei was done on the mound, Quijada comes in. He ends up getting that last out in the 6th inning, but also throws the 7th inning. He goes 1 1/3 with 1 hit, 1 strikeout, and then the back end of the bullpen was the same as Monday. He had Tapera come in for an inning, only giving up 1 hit and 1 run on a wild pitch. Or a pass ball, I think it was. So it wasn't an earned run, but still, Chicago got on the board to make it 4-1. He ends up closing them out after that. And then, obviously, Raisel Iglesias comes in the 9th, only walking 1 and striking out 2, but still does not allow a single run. Angels win 4-1 against Chicago White Sox and are finally win a series at home, finally win a series in general to close off the month of June that has been very, very unkind to the Angels. But it's a big, big momentum boost and definitely something you need going into Houston to start the month of July and start the weekend on Friday. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk about that, and we're going to talk about all the other things that happened during this series, during these last 3 days, and a little bit of injury news and injury updates. So hold on. We'll be right back after this. Today's episode of the All Angels podcast is brought to you by SportsDrink, your digital water cooler. SportsDrink is a newly created internet community that tries to find the intersection of sports and not sports. They are here to help us grow and hate your favorite team. A rising tide floats all boats, so go check them out online and on social. Go to sportsdrink.org or open Instagram and type in at SPRTSDRNK. Spelled like sports drink without the vowels. And we are back. So obviously there's a lot that has happened away from the field during these last couple days. Some of it on the field, but a lot of it off the field too. So let's go with a little bit of off the field news, if you will. After Monday's game, before Tuesday's game, it had come out that Archie Bradley will be missing at least 4 weeks. And I say at least 4 weeks because they said he will start throwing again in 4 weeks. No clue how long it will take him to build up arm strength in that meantime. But Archie Bradley is going to be a huge, huge part missing for this bullpen, especially he seemed like he was starting to kind of get back into form and coming in very stressful situations. And the reason why he is on the IL and missing 4 weeks is because of a fractured elbow. And you ask yourself, wow, where did he get that fractured elbow? Oh, yeah, that's right. There was a fight on Sunday. And again, if you watch the John Boy video, this is what happened.
Now, you might ask, who's he charging? Well, all of them, just all the Angels. Besides Archie Bradley, he fell over. Tough dismount for Bradley.
So, yes, Archie tripped getting over the rail of the dugout. I feel like I can kind of laugh about it now just because obviously you don't want anyone on your team to get injured or no one that's, you know, really a valuable piece of a bullpen to get injured. But the fact that it happened and in the way it happened made me kind of laugh just because it's something that like I would expect myself or any kind of like normal person to do. Oh, you tripped over a rail and you fractured an elbow. Okay, that's sure that happens all the time. But for a top of the level athlete to do that and get caught on video doing it makes you kind of laugh. And I'm sure Archie's upset that it happened, but I'm sure also guys are probably giving him a hard time about it in the locker room. And it just adds to another very long list of kind of weird, random baseball injuries throughout the years. I believe guys like slipping while washing their car, washing their truck, to sneezing and pulling a muscle. I mean, I'm sure you can Google, injuries, freak injuries in baseball, and you'll probably have quite a bit of injuries to choose from. Even the Angels this year, you talk about Austin Warren and bad luck, taking the ball to the nose during the Boston series. Totally a fluke kind of injury, but still happened. And that's exactly what kind of happened with Archie Bradley. Just a fluke type of injury, but it still happened. And we'll see how this plays out. Again, 4 weeks before he even picks up a ball. So it's going to be some time. Obviously, it's going to be in some time in August. And honestly, if the Angels do become sellers between that time, Archie, I think, would have been a guy that you might have wanted to move or could move for something. Again, I don't know how much you would have been able to get for him, but he could have been a part of something to get prospects back if the Angels were going to go down that route. Now that he's going to be missing 4 weeks, that's kind of out of the question now, and you just don't know how he's going to respond coming back. It was his right elbow, too, so his throwing elbow, which kind of makes it a little more questionable about how his return is going to be. All reports, though, say that it's not going to affect his throwing going forward, but it's still one of those things where I'll believe it when I see it. Any time you do anything to the arm or the elbow or the shoulder or the hand of what you use most often, obviously, the pitching hand, it's always going to be a red flag to me, and we're going to see how that kind of plays out for the Angels going forward. So some more injury news. Austin Warren, just talked about him, had a rehab stint out in Salt Lake. It went very well. No word yet on when he's going to be activated, but I would think that if it's not with the Astros this coming series, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Angels have an off day Monday and are in Miami for Tuesday, Wednesday. So I do believe that at some point during this road trip, Austin Warren will be activated off the IL, you know, barring any kind of setback. But like I mentioned, he pitched, I believe it was Monday in Salt Lake, and no negative news have come out since then. So expect him to bounce back with the Angels relatively soon. Another last injury note was going to be obviously David Fletcher, the guy that's been missing quite a bit of time since the beginning of the year with surgery, I believe hip surgery. There is now video of him taking ground balls before the game the last couple of days. I believe he's also been in the cage taking BP. The ideal kind of situation for him right now as far as timeline to return is late July. So obviously after the All-Star break. So again, something to kind of keep your eye out for. The more and more he gets work done, you can probably expect him to do some kind of a rehab stint, whether that's with AAA Salt Lake or if that's with Single A Inland Empire. But you have to think Fletcher is going to be going on some kind of rehab assignment. And when that happens, you can maybe then start counting down the days until he joins the Angels. But for as much time as he's missed, you have to really expect him to be in a minor league town. Again, either out here in California or possibly out in Salt Lake. So another thing that, again, these are just kind of topics that are off the top of my head that came through during this last couple days. Obviously, the month has ended. Angels going 8-18 for the month of June. Definitely not great. Definitely not what the Angels expected when they started this season. And there's going to be a lot of things that are going to have to change as far as, you know, personnel maybe, or just maybe personnel stepping up and being better and being what the Angels thought they were going to be at the beginning of the year. And one guy that's really looking to bounce back after a tough month of June is Michael Lorenzen. June was not nice to him, to say the least. He ended up going pitching four games only and winning one. So his record was 1-3, only 20 innings pitched. So he averaged 5 innings per outing. ERA 6.75. So obviously not great. And it's BABIP. And if you're not sure what BABIP is the batting average of the balls in play. So, you know, it's one thing for him to get guys to strike out or anything like that. But if the ball is put in play, they are getting on, they're hitting 350. So there is, that is very high. Obviously, you want that a little bit lower. But again, with his ERA being 6.75, you kind of expect it. And the hard hit rate is 37%. So when guys are making contact, they're making solid contact, and that's something that needs to kind of come down a little bit. But if Michael Lorenzen can turn it around and be the Michael Lorenzen that was obviously in the month of like April and May, that will go a long way for the Angels to have a very productive July. He's a guy that you look forward to be that third or fourth guy in the rotation. And in the month of June, he was not really productive, and hopefully new month can turn the page and become that pitcher that at the beginning of the year surprised a lot of people. If you remember when he got signed and they were talking about him stepping into the role of a starter, a lot of people were surprised by that. But shortly once the season started, you started seeing why he was given that opportunity. And now you're just hoping that he's able to get back to that in the month of July. So hopefully Michael Lorenzen is able to get back to his old form from earlier in the year. But one guy that is starting to heat up a little bit is Luis Rengifo. And if you're looking at just his last stats and his last homestand, the last 9 games, his average is .303, slugging .546, and on-base plus slugging of .888. And that means that includes 2 home runs and 4 RBIs. So a guy that has been really struggling earlier in the year seems to have found something in this last homestand. Now let's see how it goes against Houston, and let's see how it goes on the road, transfers on the road. He seems to be playing better on the defensive side of the ball as well, but a guy that has started to kind of heat up a little bit. And like I mentioned with Brandon Marsh, you know, you do need some of these younger guys to start stepping up and developing into very capable and consistent players. The second level of this team, you know, obviously you take Trout and Ward and Ohtani away. The second level, the next level, someone needs to step up and kind of be the dependable part of that group. And hopefully, you know, this is a good start for Rengifo to be that. And one thing I really found surprising, because I didn't really think about it until I started doing his research for his numbers this last series, because I knew they were good. Luis Rengifo is the second youngest position player on the Angels' active roster right now, the youngest being Brandon Marsh. So Luis Rengifo feels like he's been around forever. Luis Rengifo feels like a name that that Angel fans have heard forever. And I'm guessing if you go up to an average Angel fan and ask the age of Luis Rengifo, they're probably going to say like 27, 28, just because it feels like he's been around for so long. He's only 25 years old. He's again, Brandon Marsh is 24, so he's the youngest, and he still has a lot of developing to do. But right behind him is Luis Rengifo. He is still very young. He is still have not, you know, obviously got to his prime yet. Not every guy coming out of the minors is going to be Mike Trout, where his prime is that 22, 23, or the beginning of his prime. If, you know, Luis Rengifo, some of these guys take a little bit longer, but I was very surprised to see his age, because he has felt like a guy that has been around for a very long time with the Angels. And for him to have struggles during the beginning of the year to kind of get his momentum going. And again, you do need X amount of that bat to start feeling comfortable about, you know, about who he is and what his approach is going to be at the plate. And hopefully this is going to be an approach that continues to develop and continues to carry this team. Because let's be honest, and this is going to be a part of a bigger conversation I'm going to have later, because I feel like I don't need to have this conversation right now because it's going to be relevant until the end of the year. And that's re-signing Shohei Ohtani. Yes, Shohei Ohtani is going to demand a ton of money. And yes, he deserves a ton of money. But if you're thinking about trying to build a team around a big budget of Ohtani and a big budget of Rendon and a big budget of Trout, you're going to need guys like Rengifo who are young, cheap, and are developed into the system to perform at a high level. When you have those three guys, Rendon, Ohtani, and Trout, under contract with the contracts that, you know, obviously Rendon and Trout have and what Ohtani can have, you're not going to be able to go out on the free agent market and start signing these established veterans to fill in other gaps you have around your team. You're going to have to lean on your farm system. You're going to have to lean on your development to fill up those gaps, because they're going to be cheap and you can do that. So like Rengifo, for example, if he can develop to be a very good second baseman in 2 years, 3 years, and he can fill that gap. And now Fletcher, maybe now you're everyday shortstop. That's the kind of moves that you need. If you're going to build a team around three guys that make so much money, you can't afford to go and fill gaps with veteran players that are going to, again, have a high salary demand. And yes. Well, if Artie goes over the salary or the luxury tax, we can do it. And yes, okay, that's fine. But we know who Artie is and what he does, or as a matter of fact, doesn't do. I talked to Sam Blum on this very podcast, and he even said Artie was one of the owners that voted against raising the luxury tax. Why? Because he doesn't want to spend more money. So if you're going to come with an argument saying, like, well, if Artie spends, guess what? He's not. So let's just, and if rainbows fly out of my ass, I'll be, you know, a unicorn. Whatever. That's not going to happen. Artie spending more is not going to happen. So if you're realistically going to build a team around Ohtani, Trout, and Rendon because of the budget, because of the money they demand, then you're going to need guys like Rengifo and Marsh and Joe and, you know, these guys coming up, Kai Bush, these pitchers, Detmers, to have very big parts of this team and outperform what they're making. That's how you make a good team. You build it by developing players. You don't build a good team by buying it. And I've always said that. You build depth. You don't buy it. And I think Angels are finally starting to kind of develop a little bit of that in the minor league system right now. You look at the Trash Pandas. You look at some of the other minor league teams, minor league guys moving around. And it's finally starting to develop a little bit into a good minor league system that has taken forever to get to that point. So, like I mentioned, Rengifo is a guy that I think is going to be very valuable for this team going forward. You need to keep your young talent, and you need to hope that it develops to be good enough pieces to put around Ohtani, Rendon, and Trout. Because guess what? You're not going to be able to afford much more. You're not going to be able to afford two top-end pitchers to surround Ohtani, because it's not in the budget. You better hope those two top pitchers are Detmers and Bachman, or Detmers and Griffin Canning if he comes back, or C-Rod when he comes back. those are going to be those guys around them. And you have to really hope that they're going to be developed into those type of players. Because, again, you're not going to be able to go out and get a Scherzer type of pitcher on a free agent deal with all these guys or with all this money tied up into three guys. It's kind of the bed you made. Now the Angels have to kind of lie in it. So hopefully this means the young guys are really going to be able to step up and develop and do their part going forward. Because I think if you're trying to sell Ohtani on staying with the Angels, you have to sell him on that. You have to sell him on, look at these guys coming up. And you know what? Ohtani can very easily look back at the past of Angels development and say, yeah, but look at what you guys haven't done in the last X amount of years. And he'd be very justified in saying it or doing it. But you got to hope Harry is a good enough salesman to say, yeah, but that wasn't me. That wasn't me running it. Now it's me running this organization, me putting my, you know, player development people in the right spot. So that's how you get Shohei to stay. You give him the money that he deserves, but you also have to sell him on, look what I'm doing or look what's coming up. Because these players are smart. These players know that if I take X amount of money, that means X amount of money is not available to be dispersed amongst other guys. They're smart. They know that. So the best way you're going to keep Shohei Ohtani is if you sell him on, look what we can get and look who we can get for cheap. You've seen Detmers. You've seen these other guys come up, even for a cup of coffee. But you've seen what the potential can be. And I think that's the best way you bring Ohtani or you sell Ohtani about coming back with the Angels. Now, is it the smartest move for him to come back with the Angels on a huge contract like that? That's a discussion for another day, another podcast. We can go back and forth whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, but that's going to be a whole different topic on a whole different podcast. So that's kind of my feelings about Ohtani re-signing and the young guys, Renjifo being one of those guys, and how they're going to play with this team going forward. Another thing, oh, before we get to the big thing, the Elvis Baguero and the Matt Weiss thing, quick update on Reed Detmers. He did have a start out in AAA, I believe it was Wednesday night. And if you know anything about the AAA, surroundings of stadiums, it is a very, very hitter friendly park. So yes, the competition might not be great as far as Detmers should dominate these guys, but in some of those stadiums, you just get any kind of ball up in the sky, it's going to carry. But with that being said, Detmers had a very good outing on Wednesday, going 6 innings, giving up 3 hits, only 1 run, walking 1, and striking out 14. That 1 run off a home run, which, like I mentioned before, in that PCL league, it's very easy to give up home runs. You don't need a whole lot. And unfortunately, though, with Detmers, he's the type of guy that's been his issue, giving up the long ball. But like I mentioned, 6 innings, only 90 pitches, so they didn't really extend him really long. They didn't really need to extend him really long, but you definitely have to like what you saw from Detmers out there in AAA Salt Lake. So he'll be back. I have no doubt in my mind that he will be back with the Angels at some point this year. All right, so there was a big, big stir after Tuesday's game against the Chicago White Sox, and it revolved around 2 guys, and kind of 3. Elvis Baguero tipping pitches. Obviously, that's something where, if you're not familiar with the term, is that if you're a pitcher and you throw, let's say, curveball, fastball, make it simple, it's K2. If you're tipping a pitch, that means you're doing something different between the two before you throw the ball, so the batter can pick up on that and already know what is coming before you actually throw that. And that's exactly what Elvis Baguero was doing. On one pitch, he would hold his glove about belt high. On another pitch, he would hold his glove about mid-chest, between, you know, kind of between his belly button and his chest. So definitely a big difference as far as placement of the glove. And there's ways to fix that. There's ways to work around that. I don't know if you guys remember, what was his name? Travis? No, it wasn't Travis. Blake Parker. Blake Parker was with the Angels organization for a little while. He was a reliever. He had a very interesting ritual, not ritual, but like a windup, where he would get the pitch, and then he would like kind of move his glove around three or four times, and you're kind of like, what is he doing? But that was his way of not tipping a pitch, because when he was younger in the league, he found out that he was moving his glove a certain way when he was throwing a certain pitch. But now if he moves his glove every single time, there's no way of picking up what he's doing. Well, in this time, again, Elvis Peguero tipping pitches leads to a very bad outing, which at any pitcher and at any level, you tip pitches, you're not going to do very well. The news part of it kind of came after the fact when video came out showing Mike Trout out in center field and him seeing it from his point of view. Obviously, from center field, you're looking straight at the pitcher. He can see it happening as it's happening. So there's a video of him kind of miming what the difference is because he saw it. Second part of this is Matt Weiss, pitching coach for the Angels, comes out that he didn't talk to Elvis Peguero after the game about this, or even come out to the mound and talk to him about that, which is a very, very bad look for a pitching coach and a pitching coach, Matt Weiss, who, depending on who you listen to, whether you listen to fans or listen to what you're hearing, can possibly be on the hot seat. You know, it's not uncommon. It's not unheard of that when a manager obviously leaves, gets fired or whatever, that whole staff is now kind of under the microscope because they are the next ones out at the end of the season. If the front office doesn't feel like they're doing an exceptional job of whatever they're coached to do. So obviously, like I said, not a great look that there was lack of communication between Elvis and Matt Weiss. That is a very kind of damning statement for that pitching coach. And I've been, for as much as people want to say that Weiss needs to be gone and stuff like that, I've actually been a fan of Weiss because I understand the situation he was put into. If you remember 2 years ago, Matt Weiss was supposed to be the bullpen coach, supposed to be kind of the second in command when it comes to the pitching coach situation. But the Angels hired Mickey Callaway. Mickey Callaway got into some not great situations with a cell phone and a certain body part of his, and he had to be let go. And this was, I believe, with what, two games before the start of the season? It was like during that freeway series part before the start of the season. And by that point, obviously, way too late in the offseason to do any kind of hiring, because if anyone with any kind of skill or resume pitching coach wise was already scooped up on a team. So Matt Weiss stepped in, got a promotion, you know, if you will, and became the Angels pitching coach. And at the time, I think early in the year, you saw a lot of his struggles as far as, again, communication. You know, it just didn't seem like he was going out to the mound and whatever the next thing was, wasn't working right. But there was something that clicked. There was something for me that clicked at the end of that 21 season where it seemed like, wow, these guys are better. They've kind of almost turned a corner. You could say that about Patrick Sandoval at the time. You could say the same thing about Alex Cobb. But there was something about, wow, these guys are actually pitching better. And I think if you look at the second half pitching stats of the Angels, they were a lot better. And I think Matt Weiss deserved getting another opportunity this year, especially with the crazy amount of turnover they've had at the pitching coach within the last, you know, handful of years. But I think he deserved it. And it's kind of interesting to me, and this is just me, and you might not agree with my theory on it, but it's interesting to me how, as fans, we allow players to develop. You bring a player up from the minors, he might struggle, he might not do very good, but you also kind of see like, wow, but you know, give him a couple years, he's gonna be something to be reckoned with. Give him a couple years, give him some more experience, he's gonna be really good. But it's interesting to me how fans don't give that same kind of leeway to coaches or managers. And especially like a coach like Matt Weiss, which he didn't have a ton of major league experience, if any major league pitching coach experience before this. And for us to assume that he's going to be a finished product at this point, him as a coach, would almost be like us expecting 2 years in that Reed Detmers is a finished product already. I don't think that's fair. Now, has he made mistakes? And this Elvis Peguero one is probably one of the biggest mistakes he's made as an Angels pitching coach. Absolutely. There's no way around it. Will that cost him his job? Probably. And there's no way of defending it. But if you're going to sit there and say Matt Weiss doesn't deserve to be a pitching coach in Major League Baseball ever again, I would highly disagree. There's a very good chance that he's probably going to go, if he does get let go by the Angels, there's a very high opportunity that he probably does go to another team and becomes a pitching coach, and who knows what happens there. A lot of what the pitching coaches have to do, and I heard this on a podcast, and they're talking about just kind of pitching coaches in general, because if you haven't heard or seen, a lot of these pitching coaching types that are good at their job, they're not coming to the major leagues. The Twins pitching coach, Minnesota Twins, in the playoff hunt. I actually think they're in the playoffs right now. Like, if the season ended, they're in the playoffs. Their pitching coach left before the All-Star break to go be the pitching coach. The pitching coach, not the manager, not the bench coach, not whatever. To be the pitching coach for LSU, Louisiana State University. And why, you ask? I'll go ABC this time. Usually I go 1, 2, 3. But A, more pay. B, easier schedule. C, less stress. So if you're telling me I can do the same thing I'm doing at a different place for more money, less stress, and better, and less travel, more family time, heck yeah, I'm going to do it. And you're seeing that more and more with these big baseball factories in college. You know, you have, like I mentioned, LSU, Vanderbilt, shout out to Ole Miss winning the College World Series. Ole Miss, a lot of SEC types. They are, you know, they're bringing in a bunch of money. They're spending it on coaches. And with the current kind of analytic part of baseball being what it is, the front offices are spending a ton more money on research guys, research and develop, analytic guys, you know, nerdy type guys, I guess is a better way of putting it. And they're not spending a lot of money on the on-field part of it. So I guess my biggest point is Matt Weiss, does he survive this? Probably not. But as fans, I think it's smart of us to understand that, hey, there is a lack of really good pitching coaches out there. And a lot of it depends on your players. We Angels have not had the best pitching development, the pitching prospects as other teams. And the way that the Angels keep on flipping through baseball, through pitching coaches, it's you get drafted, there's a pitching coach that kind of has a set idea of how he wants everything to be ran from the top to the bottom. And then you get to Double A, new pitching coach. Now he's changed top to bottom what he wants to do. You get to Triple A, oh, look, another pitching coach. You get to the majors, another pitching coach. So I think there is something about having some kind of a steady voice when it comes to all that stuff. Is it Matt Weiss? I don't know. But I do think if you're just going to say that this guy can't be a pitching coach, he sucks, blah, blah, let's look at the talent also. Let's see how much of the talent can be worked. You're only as good as what you're working with. I have a feeling that is the best way of putting it. You can't make chicken salad out of chicken shit. Plain and simple. Pardon the French. But you do need to put players around good coaches, good players around good coaches, to really see what this coach is available. He can't turn, you know, your average Joe from a Sunday league into a capable bullpen piece. There's no way. Angels do need to do better of developing and scouting players to give those coaches, hitting coaches, pitching coaches, whatever, an opportunity to really develop their skills as coaches and develop their sense of program and what they want to do. And I think, again, Matt Weiss, I think, is a really good pitching coach. You can say what you want. Yes, this Elvis Peguero thing is a huge, huge nick against him. Huge. And I totally understand that. But I think if you look over his whole body of work, you can't not just point out the negative. I think you need to point out the positive stuff too. And otherwise, I don't see why you would just point out the negative. He didn't do this. He didn't do this, and never say what he did well. So that's kind of my two cents about that situation that came up this last homestand, this last series against Chicago. But there is a very good chance you will see a lot of turnover at the coaching positions next season. But again, if Matt Weiss isn't returned as Angels pitching coach, I do believe he will go somewhere else and be a good pitching coach there. You see it all the time. And again, the Astros pitching coach left for Arizona. All of a sudden, the Astros pitching is still really, really good, and Arizona is still in the bottom of their division. What's the difference? Players. So Angels need to be better at getting players that can develop into something special. So we were running a little bit longer than normal, but again, there was a lot of things that have happened today, or this last couple days, I should say. And quick shout out, obviously, at the end of the month, if Shohei Ohtani, and hopefully this comes out as you listen, if Shohei Ohtani isn't the player of the month, he should be the pitcher and player of the month. Let's give him a double. He should be a double dip. This is Shohei Ohtani's June, just June. He had a career high game with 8 RBIs. Very next day, career high game, 13 Ks. He is in the, I think this is still active, 21 and 2/3 consecutive scoreless innings pitched. Earlier in the month, he had an 11-game hitting streak. He hit the hardest home run of his career at 118 miles per hour. That's at the plate, for the most part. That's just at the plate. Besides the consecutive scoreless streak and the Ks, pitching-wise, 4-1 for the month. ERA for the month, 1.52. And his last offensive stat on here, he has a 574 slug. If Shohei Ohtani does not win offensive player and pitching player of the month, I don't know what to tell you. This guy is the MVP. I know Judge is having a great year, but I think over the long run, the second half of the season, if Ohtani keeps doing what he's doing, I think he's a runaway MVP, even with Judge doing as well as he is. After the game on Wednesday, again, every time this guy takes them out, he just makes more and more history. He became the third Angel ever to pitch with 0 earned runs and 30 plus strikeouts in a 3-start span. And anytime you're on a list with guys like Nolan Ryan and John Lackey, that is one hell of a list, especially in like an Angels list. That is, you know, you look at some of the guys that the Angels have had pitch for them. Bartolo Colon, who won a Cy Young with the Angels, not on this list. Jared Weaver, probably the best pitcher in Angels history, or one of them, not on this list. Chuck Finley, not on this list. So anytime you're on a list with Nolan Ryan, John Lackey, and that's it, that is some historical stuff right there. So Shohei Ohtani should be the MLB Player of the Month and Pitcher of the Month. I think it's only right. So hopefully by the time this comes out on July 1st, they'll have an announcement, or shortly after that, they'll have an announcement. So that's just about going to wrap it up for this podcast. And let's give a quick little pitching matchups for the series against the Houston Astros before we get out of here. Michael Lorenzen takes the mound, looking to bounce back. I talked about it earlier. His very, not very bad, that sounds really bad, but his not great month of June. He's looking to bounce back in the month of July, taking on Christian Javier of the Astros. Again, Astros is going to be a really good test. This is going to be a really, very good test for the Angels. They're not going to have, obviously, Ohtani to, you know, bail him out, I guess, if you will, in this series, seeing that he just pitched a couple days ago, at least on the mound. Maybe offensively he will. On Saturday, is a 1 o'clock game. Remember, 1 o'clock game on Saturday is not a night game. Angels have Patrick Sandoval on the mound, and Jose Urquidy is on the mound for the Astros. And you have Jose Suarez on the mound on Sunday. I kind of think, going back to the beginning of the podcast, we'll make it go full circle, they should almost start an opener just to say, hey, look, Seattle, we always do this. But we'll see how that plays out. He'll be on the mound against Framber Valdez. So, again, Astros are very good. Their pitching is very, very good. Angels need to just avoid a sweep here. Yes, it would be great, great if they win two out of the three, but they need to avoid the sweep in Houston and go to Miami and hopefully get the two there. But, you know, we'll see how this plays. It's going to be a very, very good test in Houston. You know how it just seems like you get any kind of ball up in the air and it's going to travel, especially if you hit it down to left or right field. You got the Crawford boxes out in left, and then there's a short fence on right. And hopefully the Angels are able to take advantage of that. Right now, as we stand at the point of recording, Angels are 12 and a half games back of the division of the first place Astros. And in the wild card spot, they are 4.5 games back with Texas, Tampa Bay, and Cleveland holding that last spot in the wild card. So again, 4.5 games out of the last wild card spot. It's far from over, but they cannot have another 8 for 18 month like they did in the month of June. They need to start turning around, and it needs to start in July and carry, obviously, past the All-Star break. So we'll see how that plays out. We will have another podcast recording Sunday night, and that will come out on 4th of July, obviously a day off. So while you're with the family and enjoying, obviously, some fireworks and some barbecue, you know, or whatever, you can put on the podcast and listen for a little bit. And be careful with those fireworks. Talking about a guy that just experienced a fire really close to the house. And granted, it wasn't from fireworks that we know of, but really wouldn't like to have to repeat that again on Monday night. So if you're going to do fireworks, be smart about it. Don't think like, hey, let's go out in the middle of the grass, even though there's trees all over the place. So be smart. We'll be back recording Sunday night. Always, if you have a question or you want to be on the podcast, you can always follow us on our Instagram and on our Twitter. That is Halo_Haven. Again, that's on Instagram and that's on Twitter. And if you just want to leave a call for our voicemail line, that is open 24 hours a day, 951-384-0810. The number will be in the description of this podcast. And if you lasted this long on the podcast, thank you very much. I know it's gone a little bit longer than normal, but I feel like there's a lot of things to talk about, especially in this series. A lot of stuff happened on and off the field. Again, any question, comment, or anything like that you want to put on the podcast, 951-384-0810. Please, again, subscribe, rate, review. If you're on Apple Podcasts, I ask for you, if you like what we're doing, if you it would really be great if you can write a review on the Apple Podcast. It would mean a lot to myself, especially to see the positive feedback we are getting through this podcast. So again, if you have opportunity, please do that. It takes about 2 minutes. I'm going to be honest. Sometimes when I write reviews is when I'm in the restroom, if you know what I mean. So definitely take the opportunity and do it. I would really, really appreciate it. And just let's see what the Angels do on this tough road trip against Houston, and hopefully they come out smelling like roses. So that's going to be it for this edition of the All Angels Podcast. I am your host, Daniel Garcia, and have a great night.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.